Chapter 18, Death of Gir Singh and the Departure for Mardas. Out of all the incidents that took place at Hazaribagh prison, the most horrifying, but with significant moral for all evildoers, is his death of Gir Singh of Sahnewal. I forgot to write it down in the earlier chapters, so I'll relate it here. Bhai Gir Singh was arrested in the second supplementary Lahore conspiracy case in January 1917 and sent to Lahore Central Jail. He was suffering from tuberculosis in cervical glands, and this condition of seriously bad health, he was sent to the Hazaribagh prison. He was physically unfit to undertake such a long journey, yet he was compelled to travel to this distant place. During the train journey, the sores of TB glands on his neck were bandaged every day by a man who accompanied him. In the Hazaribagh prison, he was kept locked up in a cell. He was given some medicine, which did not have any effect on him. A month after the runaway prisoners were arrested, the condition of Gir Singh became precarious. One day, Gir Singh got up from his bed, and while trying to pick up something from the floor, he fell down and became unconscious. The sentry at once reported the matter and sounded the alarm, fearing that the prisoner was dead. When all the officers arrived, Gir Singh was taken to the hospital, where his condition took a turn for the worst. Another 4 or 5 months passed, and in this precarious condition, he passed his days in terrible agony. He welcomed death, but death would not come. He appealed to the prison officials that he had been allowed to meet five sixths. Two sixths by Hari Singh Chotiyan and by Harnam Singh Rasulpur were already in the hospital with him. He expressed his desire to meet by Kartar Singh, by Munsha Singh, Dukhi, and me. On being sent for by the prison officials, we three went to the hospital. When we went to the hospital and met Gir Singh, he told us that he was responsible for Sahnewal Dacoity and murder, in which some prominent persons of the Lahore conspiracy case were involved. He had mercilessly murdered a rich trader of the village who refused to divulge where his money was lying. He told us that he killed the man by stabbing him in the neck, and it was in his neck that he developed the incurable TB sores that had suffered terrible pain. "I am passing through this unbearable agony and pain," said Gir Singh. His condition was extremely pitiable and grievously distressing. I appealed to all my brother disciples to recite the Sukhmani for him. Each of the five brother disciples should recite the Sukhmani at least once for him, and then pray for the peace of his soul. The next day, everyone recited the Sukhmani and prayed for the peace of his soul. All the brother disciples were allowed to meet by Gir Singh for a short while. The next day, he passed away in peace. The ghost did not haunt him after the prayers were said. The prison officials threw his body into the forest. When we came to know about it, we made inquiry from the superintendent. We asked him, why was not Gir Singh properly cremated? He sidetracked the issue. Instead of answering our questions, he started investigating as to how we came to know about it. We even reported the matter to the Inspector General of Prisons. He also started worrying and inquiring as to how the prisoners came to know about it. Major Cook gladly wrote on my history ticket that I had been given special concession to cook my own food. He also wrote that I should be treated as a sick saint. He even permitted me to prepare milk preparation for the long journey to Vindhras. I prepared what we call as khoya. Suddenly, we were asked to leave for Madras Presidency. I do not remember the exact date, but it was sometime in October 1921. Groups of 4 or 5 prisoners were transferred to different prisons in Madras, but from Hazaribagh, we left together. Although the prison authorities did not tell us where each of us was to go, we somehow came to know about it. Thus, 23 of us were divided into 6 groups, up to Madras Presidency, we were to travel together. As soon as we entered the state, we were to go to the prisons mentioned above. 7 buses were acquired to take us for Hazaribagh Road Railway Station, a distance of 40 miles away. Mr. Meek deliberately acquired these buses from a Bengali bus company instead of getting them from a Sikh bus company, the proprietors of which knew us personally. He did not wish the Sikhs of Hazaribagh to know about our departure. Bhai Son Singh, the proprietor of the Sikh transport company, was anxious that the prisoners should be taken to the railway station in his buses. When we came to know that all the Punjabi prisoners were to be taken by some other transport company, he felt very sad, but it so happened that his wishes were fulfilled. The Bengali transport company could not provide any bus on that particular day. The prison authorities had to acquire buses from Bhai Son Singh, who felt very happy at the turn of events. We were fettered head and foot, but the superintendent, Major Cook, immediately ordered that we should be unchained, as there was no order from higher authorities to treat us like that. With ordinary handcuffs, we were taken to the buses. When we came to the prison to board the buses, the whole prison staff came to see us off. Their wives and children were also there. Hundreds of sepoys stood guard. Our friend and sympathizer, Sadhu Radha Singh, wept like a child. Everyone was deeply moved by the sorrow he felt at being separated from us. Just before boarding the buses, congregational prayer was performed by me. After the prayer, there was a strange and touching atmosphere. Everyone stood there with his eyes wet with tears. There was a dumb silence all around. Five victory cries of Sat Sri Akal were uttered loudly. Then, as we boarded the buses, we started singing the shabds. All the spectators were deeply moved. The Gorkha armed soldiers stood guard. They gave us a salute with their guns. There were as many Gorkha soldiers as the prisoners. A European Christian missionary, who was very tender-hearted, was appointed over all in charge of the prisoners. He assured us that he would give us the best treatment possible. The first proof of his generosity, which he gave us, was that he returned our prayer books and asked us to carry them with us. On that very day, Srimati Sarla Devi had come there from Punjab on a lecture tour. The citizens fixed on the lecture in the open near and road leading to Hazaribagh Road railway station. The people wanted to see us and give us ovation on our way to the railway station, but the CID informed the authorities about their intentions, as a result of which our buses were taken by a different route. All the patriots were very disappointed. The public had decided to stop our buses if we had gone by that route. Young Bihari boys like Lukna ran after the buses, then could be seen disappearing out of sight. As the buses sped away, I sat in the bus in which Bhai Son Singh was sitting beside the driver. We embraced each other and felt so happy that our joy could be seen from our beaming faces. It appeared as if a marriage party was moving on. People wondered why we were not worried about going to places so far off from our homes in Punjab. Everyone thought that we were going to Punjab from where we would be released. After 12 years of terrible pain, terrible life in prison dungeons, we were now enjoying fresh open air for the first time. We felt we were moving in a heavenly region. Around us, the evergreen forests of Hazaribagh presented a wonderful sight. At times, as we moved in the buses, we could see a range of hills covered by green trees and thick forests as far as the eye could see. Huge trees with green branches radiated joyous freshness. The cool, refreshing breeze gave us a thrilling sensation. The vast blue sky bent over the mountains looked glorious and wonderful. This exciting vista of nature inspired us with the exalted thoughts of the creation and the creator. Bhai Son Singh talked with such deep affection and spiritual intimacy that his conversation added joy to the blissful journey of nature, blissful effects of nature. He offered us secretly such help which we will never forget to our dying day. We can never repay the goodwill and generosity which he showed us. When we had gone halfway, that is about 20 miles, our buses were stopped for rest. There was a small village and few shops on the roadside. The villagers gathered together in large groups. They had somehow come to know that the buses carried freedom fighters from the Punjab. They offered us purses full of money and showed great respect and admiration, every child to be inspired with the patriotic fervor. All this delighted us, and a Hindu patriot compelled us to accept at least 100 rupees. Bhai Son Singh tried to return 100 rupees from his own pocket, though he permitted us to accept the money. But this patriot was not accepted. He would not take his money back, but ultimately we had to take 50 rupees from Bhai Son Singh and 50 rupees from this Bihari Hindu patriot. Now we were near the railway station. On the way, Bhai Son Singh showed us the hill, well known as Bodhisnath Mountain, which was indeed very attractive. He also explained its brief history. Bhai Son Singh then expressed his desire as soon as we secured release. We should come on a missionary tour in those areas, as the people were eager to know and accept Sikhism. The Bodhisnath Mountain was inhabited by such people who would easily accept the moral and spiritual influence of Sikhi. The residents of that area were mostly Jains. They had great faith in Guru Nanak and were yet discussing these matters when our buses reached the railway station. The buses were immediately surrounded by armed military men. When the police superintendent came near our buses, Bhai Jinder Singh loudly said, "Take salute." The superintendent did not understand anything. He asked us to follow him, and he conducted us over the crossings and ordered us to march in twos, but we were singing the shabds and did not worry about the formation. Everyone was so deeply absorbed in the singing of the hymns that the police superintendent's repeated order to march in formation and was unconsciously ignored. He considered it an insult. He stopped short and, holding those immediately behind him by their shoulders, forced them to file up into twos. The freedom fighters shouted at him and asked him not to touch or compel them to do anything. Bhai Kartar Singh then explained to him in a very firm tone that he should not impose unpleasant orders. When he found that things were getting out of control, he asked me to calm them down. I told him that he could use his tongue to give any orders, but he should not use his hands or any violence to impose his orders. I told him that the Britishers claimed to be very civilized and cultured, but he made a very poor show of British manners and behavior. Anyway, after saying these things to him, I calmed down my fellow patriots. He thanked me for settling the matter, but another serious thing cropped up. The railway carriage reserved for us was fixed up with iron bars in the windows, but had no lavatory. We refused to board the train until we were given a carriage in which there was one. We firmly told the authorities that we would not move an inch till the adequate arrangements were made. No matter how hard they compelled us to do so, they were awestruck to see us so enraged. The superintendent was terribly ashamed of the ugly situation that had thus created, for which he blamed the prison authorities. We asked the police superintendent to take us back to the prison where we would settle the matter with the authorities. The superintendent said, "I have no orders to take you back. I have orders to send you to Madras by train." We tell him, "How can we get out into this carriage which is without a lavatory? You better seat us in some other carriage." "How can I?" he said. "How can I seat you in any other carriage? There are no bars to the windows. Moreover, this particular carriage is reserved for you. It is difficult to ask the other passengers to vacate any carriage." We tell him, "Then make arrangements for a lavatory in this carriage." "This is very difficult at this moment," he said. We tell him, "It was so easy for you to become a police superintendent, but it is so difficult for you to shoulder any responsibility. You should seriously think about our difficulty. The train journey will take many days. How can we travel in it without any lavatory or facilities to ease nature?" An Indian inspector of police suggested that we should urinate out of the window. We loudly protested against this foolish suggestion, saying, "Do you think we are animals or utterly shameless creatures who can be expected to urinate out of the windows? Even if this is possible, how can we ease the nature out of the windows?" We reprimanded the Indian inspector of police, saying that we were discussing the matter with the superintendent, who realized our difficulty, and it was none of his business to interfere by giving such foolish suggestions. If there was a way out, he could give some acceptable suggestion to the superintendent, but it was no use talking nonsense. The matter was about to take an ugly turn when the European missionary, who accompanied us, intervened. In a very gentle and mild tone, he said, The demand of the sick brothers from Punjab is reasonable and legitimate. We ought to be blamed for it. We may blame the railway people or the prison authorities, but we cannot immediately make amends for this mistake. On my own responsibility, I am prepared to take you all in this very carriage, and I will see that you have no difficulty in urinating or easing nature throughout the train journey. In the name of God, I appeal to you to get into the carriage. I will also travel in it. I give you my word of honor that whenever the train stops, you will be allowed to go to another carriage for the use of the lavatory. You will have absolutely no difficulty in the matter. I know you are very responsible, faithful, and truth-loving Sikhs of the great Gurus, and you will not let me down if I give you the freedom to go in any carriage or on the platform. When I treat you well and humanely, you will also, I hope, be very considerate to me. We were deeply impressed by the sincere and humane offer of this British missionary. We felt confident that he would honor all his assurances, because he had already proved himself to be very generous and kind by returning the prayer books. His face reflected his noble nature. The police superintendent was also happy that a way of the difficult situation had been found. He said, "It is all very well now. Get into the carriage. I'm sorry for the railway authorities did not look into the matter, but I'm sure the Padri Sahib will treat you well during the journey." We were all very happy about the solution of this problem, and taking the missionary inspector by his word, we boarded the train. The train steamed off, and as soon as it stopped at the next station, the missionary inspector opened the doors of the carriage and allowed us to go to another carriage for the use of the lavatory. As no one felt the necessity for doing so, no one moved out of the carriage. On every station, people grouped around our carriage to see the freedom fighters from the Punjab. Many people came inside our carriage and talked to us. The missionary inspector did not raise any objection. People offered us fruit, money, for which we hesitated to accept, but we thanked and blessed them all. From these visitors, we received a good many news about what was happening in the country. For the first time, we got an opportunity to read the newspapers. The genial missionary inspector did not prevent people from giving us anything. We were surprised to find a great change that had taken place in the country. In 1917, when we were moving from Multan to Hazaribagh, no one dared to come near us. The very sight of freedom fighters frightened people. But now in 1921, every child was inspired and brimming with patriotic fervor. All the cowardice and timidity was gone. Young patriots congratulated us for our courage in freedom and struggle, and told us that the sacrifices of the freedom fighters of 1914 movement had awakened the whole country, and everyone was freely and openly expressing his feelings for political freedom in a very high spirit. On every station we found renewed and greater determination for the country's freedom and open sympathy for the freedom fighters who were still suffering great hardships in prisons. We were deeply impressed by the liberal mind and gentle treatment of the missionary inspector. When the train stopped on a railway junction for a long time, he permitted us to camp in the open and prepare food. Accompanied by two sepoys, three of our companions went to the bazaar for buying rations. By the time they came back, fire was lighted and cooking had begun. Some brought water, others brought fuel, and in a very short time food was cooked. At this time, an old Sikh gentleman, who was a railway contractor, came near us and greeted us. He offered his services for any help he could possibly render. We thanked him for his sympathy, but immediately brought some utensils and rations for preparing Kara Prasad. It is unfortunate that we have forgotten his name and address. After taking our food to our fill, we boarded the train again to continue our journey. The Sikh contractors sent telegrams to other railway stations where our train was to stop, so every station we were received by a few Sikhs and quite a number of provincial political leaders and patriots. Some Sikhs travelled with us from one station to the next stoppage. Everywhere we found that the people were awake and full of zeal for freedom and liberation of the country. Our train then reached Kharagpur station. Here Sikhs came in a large number to meet us. There is a big railway workshop at Kharagpur in which over 5,000 to 6,000 Sikh workmen were employed. All of them came with their families to see us. Incidentally, there was the political meeting also at Kharagpur. The Sikhs who had received advance information of our train journey through Kharagpur informed the police in the political gathering about it. Thus, a crowd of 15,000 to 20,000 Hindus and Muslims also came to meet us. There was wonderful unity among all communities at that time. The organizers of the political gathering ended their meeting soon to enable the public to reach the railway station before our train arrived. There was such a large crowd that not an inch of space was left on the platform. The Sikh people were almost in tears with joy to see their brothers who had suffered so much. We got down from the train and freely mixed with the people in the crowd. The missionary inspector came to me and said, "I cannot recognize all the prisoners. I gave you full freedom to meet your admirers, but please see that I am not put into an awkward situation. My honor is in your hands now. Trusting you and trusting God, I am allowing everyone to go and meet people freely. If they run away and escape, I will be in great trouble." I assured him that his kindness and generosity would be repaid by a similar sense of trust and confidence in us. If he trusted them, they would all prove that they were worth of such a trust. He should not worry in the least. No one would betray his trust. In a matter of minutes, the Sangat of Kharagpur brought offerings of delicious food and fruit. All the prisoners sat in a line and ate to their fill. The missionary inspector and all the police guards were given food, who ate it lustily. Fortunately, this was the first time the police guards and the officers got an opportunity to eat something. Sweetmeat, bread, milk, fruit, and vegetables were freely offered to us in other railway stations, but never to the police officers and their men accompanying us. For fear of leaving us unguarded, the policemen never got down from their train, and thus they did not take a morsel of food. They were desperately hungry. They could not leave us alone to get their food and from the refreshment rooms. The political zeal of even the vendors on the platform prevented them from selling anything to the policemen guarding us. On the Kharagpur station, when food was freely distributed to us, the European inspector came near me and told me the sad plight of the police guard. They were unable to get any food and were desperately hungry. At my request, they were given all the food they wanted. They thanked us and blessed us for this kindly act. The train stopped for many hours on the station, and we had opportunity to meet people freely. Congress leaders harangued long lectures on the platform to the people present there. There were a number of prominent people among them. The railway station was surrounded by thousands of people, and we were moving freely among them. It was time now for evening prayers, and even the civil authorities were upset. An engine was immediately attached to our train, and it moved on. Everyone shouted the victory cries of Sat Sri Akal. When all the 23 passengers were back in the carriage, I asked the missionary inspector to count them and make sure everyone was present there. He was so excited that on the first count, he found 22, and on the second, he found 24 prisoners. Then he burst into laughter and said, "The Khalsa cannot be counted," to which I replied, "The Khalsa is beyond numbering." I asked them to call out the names of all the prisoners in the next station and asked them to get into the carriage by turn. He would thus be able to check the names and number and according to the list. The evening prayer, Rehras, was recited, and after the bedtime prayer of Kirtan Sohila, we went to sleep. During the night, we moved out of Bengal and entered Madras early next morning, where the train stopped at Valther station. The Madras police waited for us at Valter station. They were headed by a British police officer who was haughty and arrogant, and he started showing his arrogance as soon as he took charge of the prisoners from the missionary inspector. Earlier, there was a minor clash with the missionary inspector also, when a khadi-clad congress leader brought some fruit for us. He pushed him away rudely. We were seriously upset when we strongly protested against his open insult to our political leader. He was unnerved. Fortunately for him, Mr. T. Prakasham, editor of the Swarajya, an English weekly, intervened and settled the matter. The political leader was allowed to present food to us. When Mr. T. Prakasham pointed out and explained to him who the political leader was, the police officer was unnerved and felt greatly ashamed of his attitude. Now we were handed over to the arrogant British police inspector of the Madras police. He locked us from outside and did not allow anyone to get down, even for urinating or easing nature. He got down at every station but kept us locked in. We were in great difficulty for fear of being molested by us. He started traveling by the adjoining carriage, and even where the train stopped, he kept at a safe distance from us. Our comrades had made up their mind to forcibly seize the keys of the compartment, but fear had already overtaken him for his misdoings, and he kept away from us. From morning till late evening, none of us was allowed to either urinate or ease nature. Those who suffered from dysentery were in great difficulty. Because of this difficulty, we did not eat or drink anything. After evening prayers, we made up our mind to somehow punish this rascal, so that he might never treat political prisoners in this manner in future. I gave them a plan to which everyone agreed. Now that we were to be detrained on different stations, we planned neither to reveal our identity nor to get down. When he called out the names of the prisoners who were to get down, no one should answer. He did not know any of us by name, nor could the Madras policeman identify us. Even the two policemen who had accompanied us from Hazaribagh were new and did not know anyone by name. We also exchanged our prison shirts, carrying our number. It was 9 p.m. when we reached Rajahmundry railway station. Five of us were to get down here. As soon as the train stopped, the British police inspector and the Rajahmundry authorities came near a carriage. They consulted one another and examined some papers. Then they called out our names and ordered that those whose names were called should get down from the train. The arrogant British police officer called out our names at the top of his voice, but there was no answer. Ranthir Singh, silence. Kartar Singh, silence. Harnam Singh, silence. Arjun Singh, silence. Everyone sat silently like a statue. When the arrogant British officer was tired of calling out our names, pronouncing them with clearer voice and emphasis every time, and found everyone sitting unconcerned, a British officer of the Rajahmundry prison, who knew Hindustani quite well, came forward and started calling the names. Even the pronunciation of names was not correct. He sometimes pronounced my name as Rindur Singh and sometimes as Rain Tir Singh. Everyone remained silent till he was tired of calling out names. What to say of getting down from the train? We refused to listen to them or obey them. The British officers asked the spies in charge to point at who was who and ask those who were to go to Rajahmundry to get down. But they expressed their helplessness, saying that they knew no one. They knew me, but they did not know my name. Everyone addressed me as a saint. Beyond that, they did not know anyone. Both the British officers now found themselves in an awkward situation. They were extremely puzzled and confused. They expressed their helplessness and begged those of us who were to go to Rajahmundry to come down. The tense situation thus created attracted a large crowd, including some prominent Congress members who had come to meet us. Then, through the carriage window, Bhai Kartar Singh addressed these leaders and spectators in English and told them how cruelly and callously had the arrogant British officer treated us all day. Everyone started condemning the British officer, shouting shame, shame at him. He had to undergo so much humiliation that he became pale and felt terribly ashamed of what he had done. Responsible officers of Rajahmundry at once got the door of the carriage unlocked and allowed us to go to the latrines to ease nature on their own responsibility. Many had now got stomach troubles or headaches. Within a matter of minutes, we came back to our carriage. The British officers once more tried to single out the five who were to get down at Rajahmundry, but we turned a deaf ear to their entreaties. Responsible officers of the Rajahmundry prison gave us strong assurances of good treatment in future, but refused to trust them and were determined to teach them a lesson. Everyone admonished and cursed the British officer who had caused all this trouble. Even the arrogant British officer begged us to get down, but we asked him to stick to his orders and frankly told him that we were determined to see that he was justly punished for the treatment accorded to us. They were extremely disturbed to see us so adamant. The train had to be detained for half an hour or more than the normal stoppage. The railway authorities refused to stop the train anymore, and the train moved on, amid cheers and victory cries from all of us. All the 23 prisoners had to be taken to Madras. The news spread like wildfire, and telegrams were sent to the authorities about the Satyagraha of the Sikh prisoners. The newspapers flashed the story of the non-cooperation of the Sikh prisoners for the ill treatment accorded to them, and the just punishment given to these prisoners of the Lahore conspiracy case to the concerned officials for their callousness. Even on Madras station, no one could compel us to get down. Our carriage was detached from the train, and one of the platforms, the daris, were spread out to give us courteous reception. All this was planned by some wise prison officials of Madras prison. We came out and sat in the daris, and the Madras prison officials personally attended to our requirements. Incidentally, there was no patriot nearby. Not a single congressman was to be seen, probably because they had not received the information. On this station, only richly clad ladies and gentlemen moved about unconcerned about the freedom fighters. It appeared that the patriotic fervor was almost absent in Madras city. They pacified us and then took us to the Madras prison. In the prison, we were asked to camp in an open courtyard. We were given all facilities to take a bath, and we were given all we required with the utmost courtesy. The British officer in charge of the Madras prison treated us very gently and in a very complacent manner. He informed us that the British officer who had ill-treated us had been justly punished. He had been immediately downgraded, and the extra expenditure incurred by the government in taking us to Madras and back to Rajahmundry had been imposed on him as a fine. He now begged us not to link him up with that trouble and asked us to help him out by telling our names so that we could be sent to the prisons allotted to us. We wanted to prolong this case till it came to the notice of the higher authorities so that Mr. Meek, who was a man really responsible for all our troubles, could also be punished, but the civilized and courteous treatment accorded to us by the Madras prison officials pacified us and cooled their tempers. To win us completely by their good behavior, they permitted our comrades, who had just returned from Andaman Islands, to meet us freely. We met and embraced each other after years of separation, and then there was a grand feast for which all facilities were given to us by the prison authorities. It was all the will of God that the Satyagraha brought us to Madras and gave us the opportunity to meet our brother freedom fighters of the whole conspiracy case. After so many years, a dream vision, which I saw many years earlier, also came true. In the year 1920 in Hazaribagh, I reported to my friends Bhai Kartar Singh and Bhai Atar Singh a dream vision, according to which Bhai Atar Singh was to get his release and I was to go to Ras Kumari in Madras. A few months after this, Bhai Atar Singh was indeed released under general clemency order, and by a strange accident, I came to Ras Kumari in Madras. I had completely forgotten about the dream vision. Bhai Kartar Singh reminded me about it. There had been no Satyagraha. The plan for which was made spontaneously a few hours before I reached Rajahmundry. I might not have seen Madras, nor could I have met my old comrades, about whose whereabouts we knew nothing. So everything happened according to the will of God. It was not at all pre-planned, nor did we have any feelings of revenge against anyone. If we wished to take revenge, we gave up a golden opportunity. One night during the train journey, all the police guards and officials were so fast asleep that by Gujjar Singh, whom he addressed as Sri Manji, and by Ganda Singh and Hung, quietly collected all the guns belonging to the spies and insurgents. They brought all these guns to me and suggested that we should make good our escape. I told them that we should do nothing in the spirit of personal revenge. People were now courting arrest and jail and going to jails all over the country, and it would be a matter of shame if we tried to escape. It was against the spirit of the Khalsa. It would be sufficient humiliation for them that we wake them up and return them their guns. This is exactly what my comrades did. All the police guards and sergeants were stunned when they saw their guns missing and were wonderstruck to see our moral courage when we returned the guns. Instead of taking any revenge for the ill treatment, the Sikh prisoners gave a fine example to the courageous tolerance and heroic spirit of endurance. So we never did anything in the spirit of revenge. We therefore agreed now to tell our names to the Madras prison officials. The officers also completely left the situation of the problem to us. We first revealed the names of the three comrades who were to be lodged in Madras jail. We wanted to see how they were treated. We saw that they treated them well, with the utmost courtesy, and gave them all the rights a political prisoner deserved. They were given excellent food and all the clothes they required. This pacified us completely. Then we revealed all the names, and we were sent to different prisons in small groups.